I think we'll call the January 20th Planning Commission meeting to order.
You saw what happened today.
First thing, would you please put your cell phones on either vibrate or turn them off, please? Commissioner Benz, would you lead us in the pledge, please?
Hand over heart. I lead you in the pledge to our flag of the United States. I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Suzanne, could we have roll call, please?
Commissioner Moreno?
Here.
Commissioner Benz?
Present.
Commissioner Sturtevant?
Here.
Vice Chairperson O'Grady?
Here.
Chairperson Jack?
Here.
All present.
Next item would be approval of the agenda.
I move approval, Mr. Chairman.
Second.
No. Commissioner Benz moved for approval and not on this agenda and over which the commission has jurisdiction. Speakers are limited to 3 minutes. Please state your name and address for the record before making your presentation. The commission may take action to direct staff to place a matter of business on a future agenda. Is there anyone from the public wishing to speak? Seeing none, go to the next order of business, which is the Planning Commission business. And I think we have the administration of the oath of office for some new commissioners. Marcia? And before we do the oath of office, I'd like to make a comment. Roberta, Councilperson Roberta Fonzi called, said she was attending a meeting tonight with the mayor and the city manager and could not make the meeting, but she wanted to pass on her congratulations to the incoming commissioners and wish everyone well.
Okay, thank you. All right, I'd like you to raise your right hands and repeat after me. I, and state your name.
I, Dennis Schmidt.
I, Chuck Ward.
Do solemnly swear.
Do solemnly swear.
That I will support and defend.
That I will support and defend.
The Constitution of the United States.
The Constitution of the United States.
And the Constitution of the State of California.
And the Constitution of the State of California.
Against all enemies.
Against all enemies.
Foreign and domestic.
Foreign and domestic.
Domestic.
That I will bear true faith and allegiance to the same.
That I will bear true faith and allegiance to the same.
That I take this obligation freely.
That I take this obligation freely.
Without any mental reservation.
Without any mental reservation.
Or purpose of evasion.
Or purpose of evasion.
And that I will well and faithfully.
That I will well and faithfully.
Discharge the duties of Planning Commissioner.
Discharge the duties of Planning Commissioner.
For which I'm about to enter.
For which I'm about to enter.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah.
Thank you, Marcia. The next order of business is the consent calendar. Does anyone have any comments or changes to make to the minutes?
Yes, I'd like to pull item one.
Very good. Anyone else? Okay. Commissioner O'Grady has pulled the minutes. Commissioner O'Grady?
Comments, yes, I'd just like to preface my remarks by saying that they're intended to be constructive and not critical, but I think the minutes are important to portray an accurate representation of what transpired in the meeting, and that doesn't mean it's word for word. Brevity, I think, is a virtue, but I think there's a good middle ground there. I know in years past we've had a conversation about this, but on this particular minutes, I think they omitted some things that are important, and I would just like to suggest that these minutes be amended and that future minutes follow the same principles. And let me illustrate what I mean. On item 2, which was a consideration of a tentative parcel map for 5455 Bajada, there's no mention at all of any commissioner comments, but there were some. In particular, I had asked for a condition preventing the removal of trees until construction was ready to begin so that the site would not be compromised, affecting the neighborhood a long time ahead of the construction, the onset of construction. Director Frace indicated it was inappropriate to so condition a tentative parcel map and gave a reason. I'm still not sure I understand the reason, but I was hoping that the minutes might address that. So I at least would think that the minutes should indicate that there were commissioner comments, just a brief mention of the nature of the comments and a disposition of it. Same on item 1, absolutely no mention in the minutes that there were any commissioner comments. So I think there's a middle ground here somewhere that we can strive for, and would welcome my colleagues' comments on how best to arrive at that.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Commissioner.
I'd like to ask Warren a question. Would the city attorney be willing to address the Planning Commission on these kinds of issues in regards to what items get put into the minutes and when it's appropriate to do so?
Well, actually, it's the city clerk that kind of defines that policy, and luckily tonight we do have the city clerk here, so maybe I just ask Marcia if she would want to elaborate on that at all.
Mr. Chairman, I can explain about a little bit. Actually, we put more in the minutes than the law requires. I know that everybody who's on a commission or the council feels that what they say is important and they'd like to see it in the minutes, but it would make the minutes 40 pages long if we did. The law actually only requires that we list who's present at the meeting, what the item is that's voted on, and what the vote is, what the end result is. Nothing in between is required. And you can list a public comment, but they don't even require that we list what the public comment is. You can just list these people spoke for, these people spoke against, or something like that. We do more than that. I mean, I try to find that balance, and that's where I feel we are. Require that we list the public comment, we list the name, and a brief description of what they say. But as far as discussion over an item, what we try to do is you're talking about a particular project and you're having a discussion, you might talk for 45 minutes about it, and then at the end you vote. And if one of you, let's say, votes no, we try to make sure that there's something in there previous as to that if you have explained why you were going to vote no. You might say, I'm not going to be able to vote on this because you're taking out too many trees or whatever. Then we'll try to make sure that's in the minutes, because historically when you go back and look at minutes, that's usually what you're looking for. You're like, oh, look, everybody voted for this, but this one person didn't. I wonder why. That's the question would be asked, not what they discussed. With every project, you do have a lot of discussion. But if there is something that you feel is important, any of you, and you want to make sure that it's in the minutes for whatever reason, all you have to do is say, for the record, I'd like the record to say that I am...
application with another condition, then that has to be reported, right?
Well, you wouldn't be doing that while you're looking at the minutes, though. That whole item would have to be coming back on your agenda.
No, what I mean, at the time that we're considering the item, if we wish to add additional condition and the Planning Commission approves adding that condition, then that gets recorded in the minutes.
It's part of the motion and yes. It's part of the, yes.
So that clarifies it.
Yeah, so if you, you know, I'm at council meetings. I'm not at Planning Commission meetings that much anymore. I used to attend a lot of them. But we do try to, sometimes the discussion is pretty confusing about a particular topic, especially if it's a big subdivision or whatever. And we will try to make sure that when you're getting close to the decision, those important pieces as to why you're coming to that conclusion, we try to put in there. But all the discussion back and forth, if you really listen to tapes of some of those larger projects, you know, 100 different ideas are tossed back and forth, and then you actually end up voting on 5 or 6. And so we try to make sure that those 5 or 6 and the explanation why are there.
So then if someone feels strongly that they want a particular comment in there relative to their reason for the vote, then by asking, as stated, a matter of record, then that gets put in.
Absolutely. If someone says, you know, I think I said this instead of that, a lot of times someone will pull it because there's something in there that we have put down that someone said, whether it's a member of the public or a commissioner or a council member, and they say, you know, I don't think I said that. I think I said this. Of course, now we have the recordings on the web, so a lot of people can hear it a lot easier. Back a few years ago, you had to come in, listen to a tape. It wasn't that convenient. So we'll just go back to the tape and make sure that's what was said. Sometimes people meant to say something, but they didn't say it quite that way. We have to put down what you actually said, not what you meant to say. But if we'll listen to the tape, if there's something there that you feel should be there, we'll go back and listen to the tape and, you know, find it and put it in. Know that that costs us money to go back. I mean, that means Suzanne goes back and has to find that spot in the tape and type it in.
Sure.
But
sure.
Definitely doable.
Commissioner O'Grady, does that answer your question?
No, it really doesn't. I've noticed a distinct difference from when Grace Pucci was taking the minutes, and so it appears to me there's been some sort of a change in policy.
Let me interrupt you because sure. that's not the case. Two different people, if I took the minutes tonight, they would look different than Grace's and Suzanne's. It's not a particular policy. It's probably just a style.
Total absence of any record that there were any commissioner comments on these two items. And I don't think that is an appropriate or accurate way to prepare the minutes. And putting just a mention of those comments in there would not result in the hyperbole of 40 pages of minutes.
Marcia,
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Why don't you put it to the vote of the commission and we'll decide whether or not we're going to put it into the minutes.
I mean, from the comments that Commissioner O'Grady made? Can I have a
call for a motion? See who wants to move it.
Okay.
Well, could I just clarify? Mm-hmm. I'm not asking that these minutes be amended. I'm asking that the minutes actually reflect.
The only way the minutes can be amended is by this commission amending them.
Correct.
Well. But what we've done in the past, and correct me if I'm wrong, Chairperson Jack, is that we've just made a motion to accept or reject the minutes as amended.
Yes, we have on occasions where there's been conditions that came up, nothing of this significance. We've had, I believe what Commissioner O'Grady is referring to, that in the past there has been a little more verbiage relative to the discussion, kind of a summary, if you will. And so this reading this set of minutes, by comparison, it is quite a departure. So I'm sure that's what he's questioning here.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
I think we have two issues here. We have the issue that Commissioner O'Grady has brought up, and we have the issue of approving the minutes as before us.
Right. We still have that to accomplish.
So I would not like to see it in one motion.
No. Two separate motions, please. One motion to, I think, deal with the minutes for tonight. So I'd entertain a motion to approve the minutes as either amended or written, and then we'll take up the other issue.
Abstain.
Vice Chairperson O'Grady?
No.
Chairperson Jack?
Yes.
Motion passes 4-1-2.
Director Frase, would this be an appropriate place to take up the other motion?
I guess the direction or the nature of the motion is to give staff direction on future...
Some content from some summary contents relative to the discussion on projects or items that are brought before us. I think that's what you're looking for, is it not, Commissioner O'Grady?
Yes. Why don't we make a motion and give some direction on that?
Okay.
Well, I guess since it's my idea, I would just make a motion that the minutes provide a brief summary of each of the agenda items, including commissioner comments.
Is there a second?
Second.
Any discussion? If not, then...
I do have a comment.
Yes.
I do think that what Marcia was saying about being, you know, doing what she's supposed to do and doing exactly what is required, and then adding the things that are important to the decisions that they do, I think they're doing a fine job, and I think that I support them, what they're doing, and I thank them for that.
Any other comments? Commissioner Marino?
I would just say that I agree with that, and I would be inclined to trust Suzanne that she's doing what our policies call for.
Okay. I think that the city clerk has been quite clear about what's required, and that if there is something that we want stated as a matter of record, which I can remember Commissioner O'Keefe, when she was on, she used to do that frequently. And I think that's the particular way to handle that. And any comments relative to a no vote, I think, would be appropriate also. Other than that, I have, yes?
Let me just make one more comment. I just want to make it clear that, you know, the minutes are our interpretation of what happens in a meeting, and different people take minutes a little differently. And Suzanne, like I say, she is new, and we've been still working on the minutes for council. She's taking for the council also and planning commission. And it's not an easy task. Anyone who's done it a couple times as an emergency because we were sick or something soon learns. They say, wow, I didn't realize how hard that was. But I want to make sure that you understand that if there is something that you see that's not there on a particular meeting, like something you thought you said or something else that you felt was important, you mention it to us. You can call me or Suzanne anytime. You don't have to wait till your meeting when you're approving the minutes. You can ask for clarification on something or whatever. And if there is something, but in general, I feel like what is being said here is that just in general, Commissioner O'Grady is just wanting more in all with each item. And it's not that we can't summarize, and I don't know, I wasn't here for the meeting, I don't know how much summarization we're talking about. If every commissioner spoke, that's going to be seven paragraphs of at least two or three sentences. So it does add up, unless there's something in particular you wanted, and you can let us know that. That's definitely something we can try and do. But ideally, and Grace Pucci, haven't seen her minutes, I don't know, but they probably had more than they needed to have, and I'm always trying to streamline the minutes because we're always trying to find ways to cut costs, and all of that takes time, which time is money, yes, in this type of thing. And again, the law requires only that the item is listed and the action taken, and so we do try to do more than that, but a lot of cities are just going to what they call action minutes, which is just the item on the agenda and the action taken, and I don't feel comfortable going that far, but I am trying to streamline them so that it's more concise.
Okay. That's fine with me. We have a motion on the floor. Any second?
There was a second.
There was a second.
Okay. Commissioner Schmidt, could we have a roll call vote, please, if there's no more discussion?
Just for clarification, how exactly is this worded that we're voting on now?
I have it that the minutes will provide a brief summary of each of the agenda items and the commissioner comments.
So that would be each and every time is what, for every item that we're talking about. Okay, thank you.
Since we're still in a discussion period.
Yes.
I spent a lot of time in municipal government, and it's the only thing that's really necessary is to record the action that has been taken. And I strongly support that. I don't believe that hearsay and innuendo and comments from commissioners are really important. What is important is what has actually been approved and acted on by this commission, and that you ought to not have to record volumes of information that the public will have a hard time in reading and understanding. But what the public does understand is a vote on a particular issue, and what we're voting on is really quite clear. So I think it's completely unnecessary to attach a special condition when there are ways and means by which a person can get some comment put into the minutes. It's not necessary that we change any policy. The policy that we've had has served the city quite well for a long period of time. Thank you.
Well, may I respond to that?
Commissioner O'Grady?
Well, I really think and do respect, Commissioner Bence, that you have totally mischaracterized what I suggested. All I'm suggesting is that there be a brief summary of what the reasons why commissioners voted a certain way, their comments, because otherwise recitation of the results, it's inexplicable. It sheds no light on why certain decisions were reached. And again, I'm not making a mountain out of a molehill here. I've been on the commission for 2 years and have not commented on the way the minutes were presented until today. And I've tried to articulate my reasons, and because I've noted distinct differences, as I mentioned, the total absence of any mention of commissioner comments. And my motion is just directed at that and is not intended to be a policy change. It's just basically intended to ask why it's different from the way it was before. So, if anything, what I'm suggesting is not a change.
Well, I disagree with you. I think that what you're asking for is something to clarify your position and not to clarify the Planning Commission's position. The Planning Commission's decision or position was stated at that meeting, and it's adequately stated in the minutes.
Marcia, these are all taped and as a matter of record, so if anybody really wants all of the detail on what was said, they have access to that, correct?
Yeah, actually, I was going to ask you to let me speak one more time. I was going to say that a lot of the cities that are going to just the action minutes are doing so because they are televised like you are now.
Okay.
So a lot of people are seeing it or can easily see it or listen. We have the digital recording on our website, but we also have the council meeting that you can watch. So for that reason, and I can tell you that actually I haven't had anybody ask to see written minutes in a long time, because they're on the website also. But I used to, you know, have people asking and talking about them. But now more people are just, they don't bother to read the minutes. I guess they just listen to the tape or watch the video. So,
well, I'm not for creating more paper and more verbiage on paper to read. And with the minutes being televised and that, I'm happy with the is your explanation as to how we can get something on the record. Anyone else before we go to a vote? Commissioner Ward, yes?
I'd like to call the question. We've kind of beat this thing. I'd like to call the question. We've kind of beat this thing to death.
Okay. Suzanne, can we have a roll call vote, please? And let's make sure that, is there any question as to the understanding of the motion at this point?
Okay. I have the motion as, it's a motion that the minutes will provide a brief summary of each of the agenda items, including commissioner comments.
Okay, thank you. Roll call vote, please.
Commissioner Schmidt?
No.
Commissioner Sturtevant?
No.
Commissioner Ward?
No.
Commissioner Moreno?
No.
Commissioner Benz?
No.
Vice Chairperson O'Grady?
Yes.
Chairperson Jack?
No.
Motion passes 6-1. I mean, motion fails 6-1, sorry.
Motion fails.
1-6.
Thank you. Community Development Staff Report. Director Frace?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the Commission. This is actually our only item on the agenda tonight. We don't have any actual hearing items, so we did want to take this opportunity to just do kind of a overview, refresher on the general plan. I know we have a couple new commissioners here, and we haven't had this opportunity in the past, even with the previous commission, just to sit down and go over the general plan. So what we were hoping to do, Callie and I are going to kind of walk through the general plan, is talk about why we have a general plan, how it's organized, and some of the details of the different sections of the general plan. We want this to be an opportunity for the commission to ask questions, get clarification. So at any time, if you have a question or you want to ask something, just let us know. So we're trying to keep this fairly informal. So, you know, please let us know if you have any questions. So with that, I'll just start with a quick overview here. So the general plan is something that's a creature or a requirement of the state of California. So the state of California does require all cities and counties to have a general plan. The general plan is described as a number of different ways, but the idea is to have a comprehensive long-term vision of how a city or community is going to develop. Some people describe it as the constitution for a city. I think that's a little over the top. I tend to like to describe the general plan more as a blueprint. So it's not that you can't change it, but it is an idea of where you're going, and it's a good idea to stick to it as much as you can. But because it is more or less a blueprint, it doesn't mean it can't be amended and shouldn't be amended. And from time to time, we'll bring amendments before the commission. It is a long-term document. Our current general plan had a 25-year build-out window, so it's set to expire in 2025, or it would be at that point at a build-out where it would be time to do a thorough update of it. Most often, though, communities do updates much more often than that. But for environmental reasons, especially when you're doing planning for infrastructure like freeway interchanges and that sort of thing, it is really important to look out that far so you make sure you're not overlooking the infrastructure requirements for these build-outs. So cities, you know, it used to be general plans were 20-year horizons. We picked 25. I've seen some cities actually go out 50 years. And a lot of that really has to do with the expense of long-term infrastructure and making sure that you're identifying those long-term needs as early as possible so you can basically finance them. Otherwise, if you wait too long, you end up not having enough money to build those facilities. So the general plan is basically the foundation for how the city's land use and development policies are created. There is a requirement in state law that the zoning ordinance has to be consistent with the general plan. Believe it or not, when it kind of makes sense, but when general plans first came out in the 70s, there wasn't that requirement, and it took a couple years before that actually became a requirement. So it used to be that cities had general plans that said one thing and zoning ordinances that contradicted it. So that was something that's been cleaned up, and we try to keep both of our documents as consistent as possible because it is a problem if they aren't. Also, all our development projects have to be consistent with the general plan. So that would include things like specific plans, plan developments, conditional use permits, subdivision maps, and capital improvement programs, which are mainly handled by the public works departments. But I think some of the commissioners recall that once a year the public works department will present the capital improvement program, which is the list and funding of all the facilities like roads and bridges that we're planning on building. We need to make sure that those are consistent with the general plan. And as we go through different hearing items, we'll always talk about with maps and CUPs, general plan consistency, and that's one of the first findings that this commission needs to make anytime you approve a project. I think finding number one usually is it's consistent with the general plan. So that's where that requirement comes from. Then in terms of updating the general plan, you want to keep your general plan up to date, and it does need to be revised as needed as situations in the community change. That said, there isn't a specific requirement in the state law that says how often you have to update your general plan elements. The only exception to that would be your housing elements. The housing elements are the one element that the state does have a requirement that you update on a regular basis. Typically, it's about a 5 to 7 year cycle. They'll actually give us numbers that we have to incorporate into our housing element. And that's a process that we're going to be starting here this winter, is the update of our housing element, because the state has issued new housing numbers for this county. Also, in terms of updating, there is a limit on how often the general plan can be updated. The state puts a cap at a maximum of 4 amendments per element per year. So right now we've got basically 7 separate elements. So the way that would work is we could update the land use element only 4 times this year, but you could also update the circulation element 4 times. So it's 4 per element. A lot of times people think it's just 4 general plan updates per year, but actually it's a little bit more permissive than that. But typically most of the amendments end up being land use amendments, and that we do keep track of those because you want to keep a couple in your pocket in case you need to make a change at the end of the year. So that, I'll turn it over to Callie, and she'll talk a little bit more about how ours is organized.
Now, when we look at the general plan, there's 7 elements that the state requires are part of every general plan. Those are going to be land use, circulation, housing, open space, conservation, noise, and safety. Now, these are the main 7 elements. They do, however, allow those elements to be consolidated or reformatted, as long as they're also covered and addressed in the general plan. You can also include additional or optional topics that are specific to your city. The main thing here is that there's equal status or balance among all the elements. So each one has to have consistency between the others. You can't have one element has policies that contradict another. And so when we look at projects, it's something that we look to make sure it's consistent with each element of the general plan. Now in Atascadero, our general plan is organized into 4 separate sections. So the first one's going to be our land use, open space, and conservation element, and that also includes recreation and economic development, which are 2 optional elements that we have added in. The second section is a circulation element, and that primarily just focuses on circulation alone, traffic, bicycles, trails, and other circulation issues. The third part would be the safety and noise element, and those are the 2 required safety and noise sections, and the last one is housing. Now, when we look through the general plan, everything is organized into goals, policies, and programs. So when developing the general plan, the first thing that the council and the public works to do is to identify the goals, which are the main direction centers. It's really more of a long-term long-range plan, and it's supposed to express the community values as a whole. So there's very few goals throughout the plan. However, there's policies and programs for, to implement each one of those goals. The policy is going to be an official statement providing more specific direction. There can be several policies for each goal. And the programs were going to be the actual short-term action plans to implement those policies to reach our goals in the long term. This is an example of one of our goals from the Atascadero General Plan. So we have the goal at the top to protect and preserve the rural atmosphere of the community. Then we have several policies to help implement that and programs for each policy on how we're planning to enforce that goal. And do we have any questions at this point?
Mr. Chairman.
Commissioner Marino. Sorry.
A quick question about housing. The state requires us to change every so often. Is that simply because of affordable housing, or is there another aspect that the state gets its fingers into?
It is mainly a concern of, well, mainly affordable housing, but also just overall housing supply. The state has identified that housing is a key issue related to the economic health of the state. We also are one of the fastest growing states in the country, and our long-term projections show the state having to grow significantly more. So they're targeting, you know, populations of potentially 50 million within the next couple decades. So they realize that if that's going to happen and we're going to maintain the quality of life within the community and the economic vitality of the state, that that growth has to happen in a way that's well-planned and well allocated throughout the state. They're very concerned, obviously, with the water distribution, resources, farmlands. So they see the housing element as the way to encourage the growth to be in the right area and have everyone have a long-term vision. What had happened historically is some communities, some of your higher-end communities, like, say, a Carmel, pretty much had a no growth, no affordable housing rule, and they depended on other cities to provide the housing and the affordability and that sort of thing, which creates a lot of commute problems and isn't really equitable. And the state basically now says, no, you know, even if you're Beverly Hills or Carmel, you have to provide affordable housing, you have to provide your share of housing. And that's really how the state got involved. And every year they continue to kind of tighten it up more and more in terms of their review and their requirements. We think that this review will be fairly stringent. They'll have a lot to say about our element. They typically spend a lot of energy on the coastal cities because that's where the problem's most acute.
Thank you, Director.
Commissioner Benz.
Yes, Warren. We have seven elements, and that's in the state law, right? Those seven elements?
Correct.
And if we wanted to put in an economic element, could we do that?
We could, and we used to have one. What we did is we consolidated it with our land use element.
So if my math works right, if we have the seven elements, we could have 28 amendments to the general plan in a given year.
Correct.
But if we had 10 elements, we could have 40.
Correct. But only per element.
Only on four per element, yes.
Correct.
Okay. I understand that.
Commissioner Smith?
What are some distinguishing factors between the open space element and the conservation element?
They tend to have a lot of overlap. And that is one of the reasons we ended up consolidating them. Because we're just a city, open space and conservation works a lot better at a county level where you clearly have resources that you're trying to conserve and agriculture, and then you have other areas that are just scenic and unique, like coastal areas that would qualify as open space. In Atascadero, I think the line is a little more gray between the two. So we have a number of policies that deal with conservation of our natural resources and preservation of certain areas as open space. So we see those as both meeting the criteria of both those elements. But there's not a bright line between open space and conservation in our general plan.
Thank you.
Anyone else? Thank
you. All right. Back to the presentation. So I'm going to give a little bit of an update just on how this general plan came to be. So our latest update, or the last update we did, was in 2000, or 2000 was when we started. We actually approved the update in June of 2002. And actually, if you look at the kind of the acknowledgement page in the general plan, you'll see that Commissioner Bentz was actually the chairperson of the Planning Commission back then. And we also had Councilmember Kelly, Fonzie, and O'Malley were planning commissioners at that time. So there's actually still quite a few members of the original group of commissioners that approved this plan or created this plan that's still involved with the city. The way to think of this general plan was this plan was an evolution of the previous general plans. The city was incorporated in 1979. There was a 1980 general plan that was approved. That plan really focused on the community resource and open space issues and the large lot development pattern. That was updated again in 92, and then this plan built on the 92 plan. So there was a lot of good policies and goals in the previous plan, but there wasn't a lot of detail on implementation, and that's really what the commission and council ended up focusing on, was how to take what was pretty good direction policy-wise in terms of what the character of the community would be, but shape it into a document that really worked better for implementation and allowed some larger development projects to move forward. As I mentioned previously, the general plan had a 25-year horizon, so the build-out date is 2025. There's some confusion about what build-out dates mean. A lot of people think that, well, when you hit that, then you're done building and you never build again in the city. And that's not how it works. It is just a target by which you plan, and you never actually get to a point where you stop building, but this is how you're going to plan and lay out your facilities, and then you'll update again, and then you'll push the build-out date. But you never get to a point where you actually stop building. At least most cities haven't ever gotten to that point. A key focus of the general plan update was community involvement. There was a couple dozen, actually, neighborhood meetings, community workshops, design charrettes, and hearings, and I'm sure Commissioner Bentz can regale you of all the details, but it was a long process that involved a lot of public input. That was the direction from the City Council. They knew there was a lot of concern about updating the general plan, and we did want broad buy-in and a lot of input from the community on exactly what went into the general plan. What we found through this outreach process is that the community was mainly concerned about maintaining the town's small rural character. We found and heard that over and over again, and I think as you read the general plan, you'll see that there's a real emphasis on there. The whole concept of elbow room came out of one of the earlier general plans, I think the original 80 general plan, and that was the idea that Tascadero was a place with large lots, a place where you could raise farm animals, where there was plenty of open space, trees, hillsides, that sort of thing. And that's what we've tried to respect with this current general plan. At the same time, finding those locations where we can do more intensive development projects where they make sense. So, as I mentioned, some of the key issues really were about quality of the community, the hillsides, the open spaces, making sure we had the amenities and public services we needed to support the communities, quality neighborhoods. Employment was always a big issue. We wanted to increase our revenue and employment base, and then also make sure that the town's an attractive place. There's kind of three elements or pieces of the general plan that were adopted actually fairly early in the process that set the direction. One was to readopt the goals of the previous general plan. So the City Council did that very early in the general plan update process just to reassure the community that we weren't going to reinvent the general plan, but we were going to build on the previous general plan. We also adopted a series of framework principles that were used to organize how the general plan would be written. And then they adopted a series, smart growth principles that also helped guide the evolution of the general plan. So the framework principles, I won't talk about these all in detail, but there was four guiding framework principles. One was to protect the natural environment. The second was to improve the appearance and character of Atascadero. The third was to provide a secure revenue base. And the fourth was to promote well-planned neighborhoods. So those were themes that were built into the general plan and continue to be kind of the foundation of it. And then we also adopted the smart growth principles early on in the process, and those dealt with basically what the smart growth principles nationally are, but they were tailored more for Atascadero. But they focused on well-planned growth, making sure we're maximizing existing infrastructure rather than build out in the greenfield areas. The idea was build along El Camino Real, where you already have roads, sewers, water lines, that sort of thing, and that is how we're doing development in Atascadero. Support vibrant city centers, downtown being the best example of that. Coordinate with regional and local planning agencies, and we do that with the county and the other cities. High quality education and school facilities, build a strong community socially, emphasize joint use facilities, support creative entrepreneurial efforts, encourage full community participation. I think the general plan was an example of that, and then establish a secure local revenue base. So those are some more ideas that were built into the general plan. We did do a lot of coordination with the other local agencies and communities when we were doing the update. So that's kind of an overview of the update. Any questions before we move on?
Seeing none, we'll move on.
All right. So we're going to now start walking through the general plan and give you kind of an overview of kind of the highlights of each of the elements and what's in it. And then we'll break this up between me and Callie here. But I'll do the first element, which is the land use, open space, and conservation element. So this does have the three mandatory elements that we've already mentioned. We've also included in some of the what were previously optional elements in the 92 general plan were consolidated. So there was a recreation element, an economic element, and a fiscal element that we took the highlights of those three elements and they got combined into this element as well. So what the land use element does is it really focuses on the distribution and intensity of land uses. And we've got the general plan map up there on the other screen. So the first thing we do with the land use element is basically figure out where the housing, the commercial, the industrial, the open space, recreation, and public facilities are going to be allocated in the city, and that is the land use map. And then the goals and policies of the document reinforce and support the land use diagram or map. One of the themes of the general plan was to build on the historic pattern of development that E.G. Lewis created for Atascadero back in the turn of the century. And that was the idea of small lots and more urban development at the core around the downtown area and City Hall, with increasing larger lots as you moved further away. And that is that idea of elbow room. So the general plan's written that as you move away from the downtown core, we would have increasing elbow room or larger lots. And that's also built into our subdivision ordinance and zoning ordinance. When we do subdivision reviews, the lot sizes, there's actually a formula that forces the lots to become bigger as you move further out of town. And sometimes, you know, applicants are somewhat confused and perplexed by that. And sometimes you'll hear it at a commission level that people think they're kind of crazy rules and don't understand where they came from. But that is where that policy and those standards come from. This diagram here, this is the urban form diagram, and this is a pretty good summary of how the development policies and framework are applied to Atascadero. So you can see out in the hills, we have kind of that light yellow-green area. That's the area with our large lot rural residential designations. That's the area where you see the increasing elbow room. The yellow areas that are closer to El Camino Real, those are our more standard single-family neighborhoods where we have the half-acre lot sizes and that sort of development. And then the purple area is what's identified as the urban core. And the general plan was set up to focus most of the development into the urban core areas. So that's where we have all our commercial and industrial uses and all our multifamily areas. And there's a number of policies and programs in the general plan that encourage infill development, mixed-use development, new commercial development in that purple area. So the majority of the projects that have been approved in the last 5 or 6 years, most of them will be in that urban core area. And that was the idea under that smart growth principle, to maximize all the existing facilities and public improvements that already are in that area, and also to protect and take the pressure off the areas where we have the most resources, which are out in the hills. In terms of just the layout of the city, Tascadero geographically is the largest city within San Luis Obispo County. That tends to also be a challenge for us providing services. You always hear about the issue with us maintaining roads, and a lot of that has to do with we're so spread out. We're 15,000 plus acres, which is basically equates to 25 square miles. So we have more roads per capita than anybody else. We also have less revenue per capita than almost anybody else. So that's one of our underlying issues in Atascadero, is how to fund roads. You can kind of see from the lines on the screen up here. Let me actually get the laser pointer here. Where is it? There it is. So the black line would be the existing city limits, which is basically the colored area over here. The line out here, which is kind of the gray area, that would be the original colony boundary. So that was what was laid out as Atascadero by E.G. Lewis, but it was never incorporated into the city. So we have this area here, and this area here and here, that are areas of the original colony, but they aren't part of the city at this point. This area down here is the Eagle Ranch area, which calls for in the general plan as an annexation area. We do plan to annex that one part of the old colony. These other two areas currently aren't anticipated for annexation, just due to the terrain and the population bases and the service requirements. It doesn't seem like it would make sense for the city to bring those in. This purple line here is what we call the urban services line, and we've got this town divided between the areas inside and outside the urban services line. Typically, we provide most of our parks, sewer service, all the commercial multifamily developments within the urban services line. There's not a rule that you can't provide sewer outside the urban services line. It just doesn't tend to be the pattern that we have, though. So we provide a higher level of service within the urban services line. In your general plan, there is this table, table 2-3, and it doesn't really look like much, but this is actually the base of the land use map, and this assigns by acreage the different land uses and then calculates the density or the number of people within those zones, and that's actually how we get to our build-out population, and that was the main thing that was analyzed when we did the EIR on the general plan, was how many people do you end up with. So the assumption is that we end up with about 36,000 people at build out, about 13,000 dwelling units, and this table will show the distribution and the assumptions of the general plan map. It also makes assumptions in terms of how much square footage of commercial we expect within the community. So there's once again the general plan land use map. I think we're all kind of familiar with the color coding. Those are kind of standards that most cities use. Yes?
Warren, do you anticipate any major changes in the commercial side? I mean, back in 2000, from 2000 to now, any major changes in the commercial size, I mean, of any significance, or any major changes in any of the categories?
Well, I think what we have seen in the last couple years was the amount of commercial space or land was reduced. We did have some projects like Dove Creek that redesignated some large commercial projects to residential. So we have reduced our commercial square or commercial acreage to a certain degree. We do expect that that may change as we move forward with some other future projects. I think we've recognized, just from an economic development standpoint, that we're probably a little short on the commercial acreage, and that is one of those things that currently we have an application that's pending that will look at potentially increasing the amount of commercial acreage.
Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
I'd like to ask Warren a question.
Sure, go ahead.
Warren, I liked this land use designation and acreage in that, but I noticed that the city has about 15,600 plus or minus acres in the city. Is there any way we could find out, this commission, I think this commission would be interested in knowing the answer to this question. How many of those 15,600 acres are improved and how many are unimproved?
That is a number we can put together for you. One of the things we did with the general plan update as well is we built this graphic information system, or GIS mapping system, that we have now. Before the update, we just had some old blueprints and we didn't have any accurate real mapping of the city. So now we do have the mapping of all the parcels. That's all tied in with the assessor records. And with that, what we've done in the past is, based on the assessed values, we can typically pull out those parcels that maybe not vacant but are clearly underutilized, and we've been able to do that and figure out how many parcels we have that fit that category.
I can help you do that. I've done it.
Okay.
So I think it's really a statistic that planning commissioners should be carrying in their heads at times, as well as this land use designation map that shows how many acres of what we have in the zoning, based on the zoning that we have in the city. Those are awful important things that we need to keep in mind when we're making decisions in that. So if you could find some time to do that, or if you want me to help you, I'd be glad to do it.
Okay. Well, we'll run our numbers, and you can take a look at it, and if you can improve on them, that would be great.
Okay.
Commissioner O'Grady?
Two questions. One, you mentioned an application for increasing commercially zoned land, I guess. I wonder if you could elaborate on that. And then secondly, you mentioned annexation, specifically Eagle Ranch. And I wonder if you would elaborate on the process of annexation, the involvement of the Planning Commission in that, and what general plan criteria might be applicable for consideration in the process of annexation.
Okay, well, let me start with the commercial one real quick. That project I'm referring to is the Del Rio specific plan project, which is the annex slash Walmart project. That is an active general plan application that we have in the works right now. That proposes, I think, to add about 10 or so acres that are currently residential, to redesignate those as commercial to accommodate the project. That would also include the master plans and the maps that would go along with allowing the development. Because of the size and intensity of the project, it will also have an EIR. That item actually goes to council next week, where we're going to get authorization to move forward with the EIR. And figure out exactly what the process is going to be. The commission will be involved at the final levels. There may be some study sessions, depending on the council's preference, somewhere in between that would allow commission input as well. In terms of annexations, the Eagle Ranch annexation is another application that's currently in that we're working on, although due to the economic downturn, it looks like the applicant is slowing down their process slightly there. So we're not sure how fast that's going to move forward. What Eagle Ranch proposes is to annex to the city, amend the general plan, add a zoning designation to their property in the form of a specific plan, process a tentative map, and then also lay out a process for future development plans. All that will require an environmental impact report, or EIR, as well. The general plan, one of the first sections, and I'll get you the section numbers later, lays out the policies for annexation of the Eagle Ranch, and that's where the requirement for the specific plan EIR come from. That is in the general plan. It does talk about Eagle Ranch being the one unincorporated area that would be annexed to the city. We did amend our what's called sphere of influence, which is LAFCO, which is, now we're getting jargony, but LAFCO is the Local Area Formation Commission. It's a county organization that is, their board is made up of Board of Supervisors, members of cities, and they have the final say on what are called reorganizations of different political bodies. So Atascadero, if we were to annex something, they under state law, that's considered a reorganization where we take something that was in the county and move it in the city. Well, that requires LAFCO's review and approval. And LAFCO also maintains what are called spheres of influences, which are your build-out lines of how big the city ultimately will grow to. So we worked with LAFCO after the general plan was updated in 2002-2003 to amend our sphere to put Eagle Ranch in, and then worked with the county on what the policies would be for bringing that in, which everybody agreed the specific plan EIR would be the proper vehicle to do that. So that's the long-term process on that. The commission will be involved in that, much like they will be up on the Del Rio specific plan. Is those projects will require the Planning Commission's recommendation, and the council will make the final decision on it based on, you know, whatever testimony they get, plus consideration of the commission's recommendation. We also envision there'll probably be some community study sessions that will involve the Planning Commission, so the Planning Commission has the ability to provide some input early on to help shape that project.
Thank you, Hort.
This table here, also in the general plan, what this shows is how the general plan relates to the zoning ordinance. So this column right here is the different land use designations, which are the different colors on your general plan map. And it tells you in this center column which of the different zoning districts can be applied. So it's possible that different zoning districts could be allowed in a single land use designation. The best example of that is the commercial designation. We have a designation that's general commercial, which is fairly broad, and within general commercial, you could see either a commercial professional zone, a neighborhood commercial zone, a commercial retail zone, or a commercial tourist zone. So you can switch around those zones without amending the general plan. So that's one of those things that's built in the general plan to make it a little easier to do commercial development within the city. And then the final column deals with that appearance review, which is the projects that require some sort of architectural standard. So your commercial, multifamily, and industrial projects have to go through some sort of appearance review that meets our standard, whereas single-family residential is exempt from that requirement. You can build a house, you know, that looks however you want in the residential areas. The exception to that would be the plan development overlays that require commission and council approval. Then we regulate single-family appearance when it's that type of project. Master plan and development areas, this is kind of a unique little piece of the general plan. We actually end up dealing with this quite a bit at the commission level. When we were updating the general plan, there was 12 unique sites throughout Atascadero that the council and commission decided needed special master planning requirements before they just developed. That includes Eagle Ranch, the Dove Creek project, the Woodlands or Las Lomas specific plan. Those are all examples of those types of projects. And what it did is it said that those had to go through a master plan process, and then the council laid out some sort of criteria for the types of projects that would be consistent there. This actually has worked out fairly well. Most of these projects have already been built, so it did help to make it clear to the applicants and to the community, you know, what type of project would be allowed there, and then allowed those projects to move forward. The Del Rio specific plan project is actually areas 5 and 6 up here, and we're going to probably be, well, that's part of their process, is to go through that master planning consistent with this section. And this is just a table that goes along with the master plan of development map. Urban reserve areas, I think we kind of hit this. We talked about Eagle Ranch, so you can see the city limits is the red line. The black line is our sphere of influence, so this area between the red and the black, that's the area we're going to end up annexing. In terms of just how the general plan's organized, Callie talked about we have a series of goals. I'm going to try to pick up some speed and move through this, but there's a couple goals that deal with rural character, the whole idea of elbow rooms built in there, preserving existing neighborhoods, and goal 9 deals with rights to keep livestock in there. So those were all goals in the general plan that tried to deal with or address the issue of rural character. And then there's, as Callie mentioned, a number of policies and programs that implement each one of those goals. In terms of downtown and development and economic development, goals 3, 4, 13, and 14 of the general plan really focus on that. As part of the general plan, we created the redevelopment agency with our project area. We've used that to really put a lot of investment into the downtown core, the new bridges, the improvements of Sunken Garden. Those are good examples of those types of projects. Really, one of the foundations of the general plan was to recreate or revitalize the downtown, so that really becomes the core, the central gathering place for the community. The Colony Square Theater project is another piece of that. We've also really looked at trying, as I mentioned, to encourage new development along El Camino Real. We now have new policies and ordinances that allow the infill mixed-use development. We're trying to give an opportunity for some of these older strip centers and underutilized uses to convert to a newer and higher and better use, and a lot of times that involves allowing some residential in those areas as well. We were seeing some progress with that right up until about a year and a half ago when the residential market kind of collapsed. So that slowed that down, but we still think that long term makes a lot of sense in terms of being able to provide reinvestment within the community and address some of our housing needs within the community. Hillsides, open space protection is a key issue. It's probably not a surprise to anybody in Atascadero, but there's a lot of really, really steep hills. This map that's on the screen shows where those hills are. Those red areas are slopes over 30%, which in most places is considered totally unbuildable. In Atascadero, we actually build on them, but we try to limit the amount of growth we do there. But you can see that most of the west side has 30% slopes. 20 to 30% is really common in that area. So goals 5, 6, 7, and 10 deal with policies on how to accommodate development in those hillside areas, goals for protecting the native trees, which is where the tree ordinance comes from through the general plan, conserving energy resources, that sort of thing. So that would be the conservation portion of the general plan. Goal 8 specifically deals with creeks and waterways. We've talked about this before, but we have a lot of what are called blue line creeks, which are creeks that were defined by the federal government after World War II, and these blue line creeks that were mapped are basically the jurisdiction of a lot of different state and federal agencies. We have more blue line creeks than anybody else in the county. Most communities have one or two. We actually have 70 separate segments of blue line creeks. And a lot of the issues that we're dealing with right now with the Regional Water Quality Control Board deal with just the number and distribution of blue line creeks within the community. So goal 8 sets a number of policies and procedures for how we deal with our creek systems. Goals 11 and 12 deal with parks and recreation. We do have a diagram in the general plan that shows the locations of all our existing park facilities and lays out the acreage. The actual design of and facilities that go in the park parks themselves are under the control of the Parks and Recreation Commission. Goal 15 deals with public services. That's where the idea of the urban services line comes from. And that would be it on the land use element. So any questions before we go to circulation?
Just a quick question has to do with the strip malls, since we have so many of them. Any activity taking place on a long-range goal for how they would be revitalized, or is this just kind of waiting to happen?
We've developed the policies that allow the reuse. We don't have any program that specifically targets any certain area. The way our program's basically set up is to allow the private development community to figure out which projects would be best and bring those in and propose those to us. We did, though, work with SLOCOG last summer on doing just some visioning of the South El Camino Real corridor in terms of what it could look like, just to get people a little bit more excited about potentially starting to invest in some sorts of those projects. And I'll get the document pulled together, and we'll bring that, and I'll get copies of the commission, because it really does show, you know, what could happen on South El Camino Real as you started to transition those strip centers to, you know, actually a more profitable and higher intensity use. We could actually end up with that area looking a lot nicer and being a lot more economically vital than it is today. So I'll get
In our circulation element, we're really looking for a long-range plan for a network of highways, streets, pathways, and trails. So we're looking at everything from motorized vehicles, transit opportunities, bicycles, pedestrians, and equestrians, because equestrians are such a heavily used activity here in Atascadero. We've developed policies and programs to enhance vehicle, bicycle, and pedestrian safety, and also to promote alternative modes of transportation, because that is one of our smart growth principles. This is kind of a diagram of what our typical road hierarchy looks like in Atascadero. So as you look through, through your circulation maps of the different roads, each one's already specified for a certain type of road. So when a development project comes forward, we already have it planned out on what type of road that needs to be developed to, what type of standard it's going to be developed to. So it goes from rural, local, smaller streets all the way up to larger local roads, rural collectors, and then the largest roads, collectors, and arterials. This is a drawing of our circulation diagram. Something important to note about this is just the way that our streets in Atascadero wind through each other, and this is primarily because of all the creeks and hills and just the shape of the land around the area. But it's not a typical grid system like you see in a lot of other cities, which is definitely something that we have to consider when we're doing planning. It's not a simply laid out type of grid. Another important thing to notice is that the only major roads that we have going through town are El Camino Real and Highway 41, besides, of course, the freeway, which intersects right through the city. So all of the smaller roads lead to these two main roads, which can give problems for traffic, and we have to consider that type of thing when we're doing planning. These are some drawings of our typical bikeway and trails that we have approved through the city. So when we're, and then we have a trail system and bikeway plan approved. So when we get new projects in and they're near bikeways and trails, then they are required to build those if it's on part of their project. This is a couple different things. We're looking at our capital improvement projects and our circulation mitigation.
I have a brief question. Is there any program to put very simple bike racks in front of grocery stores? And I'll tell you why I asked that. The other day I was in front of Vons, and there's a guy wrestling with his bike trying to tie it up to a tree. So I went up there and I said, "Why don't you use a bike rack?" He says, "Show me where it is." And I've noticed that, I won't say there's a lot of people that drive their bicycles to grocery stores, but there's enough of them, and I don't see these very simple bike racks where they can tie it, and they don't have to tie it to a tree. I don't know whether that existed years ago and somebody pulled it out for some reason, but I can't believe that somebody hasn't made that recommendation.
Well, on new development projects, it's definitely something that we consider. Every time we even see a small project, like that, the Tasty Freeze and the Carl's Jr., they all are required to put bike racks in. APCD always recommends it because they feel it helps cut down on, people driving. Maybe it'll encourage more people to ride their bikes. It is difficult on older projects like at the Vaughn Center, since it was built so long ago. It probably wasn't a requirement at that time. But definitely it's something that in planning commissioners can look for that on projects and ask for that to be put in. Any other questions?
Commissioner Schmidt?
On the bikeway and trail diagram, and it's hard to, are the heavy lines the designated streets that would include those, the trails?
Yes, they do. So it's a combination of bikes and trails. And we've got a couple different ways that they can be done. A lot of these, sometimes the bikeways are just right along the road. Sometimes we do, you know, a separated trail with trees on both sides. And then we have some really great trails over by the Salinas River that are much more well-defined.
Have they been coordinated? I know the schools have the Safe Routes to School program. Are they coordinated with most of the school sites then, too?
I think generally we're trying to do that right now. Public Works is working with the schools on a trail at San Gabriel. That's one of the areas of San Gabriel School. So that would be consistent with this diagram here. They want to get a nice pedestrian walkway between Highway 41 and the new signal up to the school. There are just some issues that we've run into departments trying to figure out how to deal with it. We do need to update this diagram so it's a little bit more realistic. This is probably a little more ambitious than actually is financially possible for Atascadero at this time. And I think trails and paths are going to just be one of those issues as a community. We're going to have to spend some time working out the details so we can figure out what we really can afford to do.
Well, at Santa Rosa School, we use the Safe Routes program to put bike trails and paths along the road near in that area, and just kind of a satirical comment. I guess in 1913 he was implementing smart growth policies by having narrow streets at that time.
Mr. Chairman,
Commissioner Benz,
Warren. When I look at this capital improvements and circulation mitigation projects, I go back to when we were considering the general plan. The new general plan, and there was a study done asking our residents what they thought was most important in the community, and the number one issue was roads, the condition of our roads, which were terrible. And when I look at this capital improvement and circulation mitigation projects, it looks like since our roads are so bad, how could we put in any improvements until we fix the roads so that those roads would be capable of handling the traffic that the new improvements are going to require? So how are we doing on that? To me, I don't see a lot of progress in the city on road improvements in that. There's a number of road improvements, but it was the number one priority of this community at the time.
Right. Well, there's kind of two different sides to that. One is these capital facilities that are shown on this diagram here. That's the biggest map we have. These are mainly development-driven improvements. And one of the things that the state has set up as a law is you can only collect fees from new development that pays for the impact of new development. So you can't collect a fee to fix an existing road out on the west side of town with a capital facility fee. We can only use it to fix or repair or expand something that's impacted by the development. Now, you can see that most of the improvements are along El Camino Real, the freeway interchanges, and Morrill Road. Well, that goes back to that framework diagram that showed most of the development. And the city has, for the last 6 or 7 years, allocated general fund money, I think $250,000 a year, specifically just to road maintenance. And we're, I think, one of the only cities in the county that actually uses any general fund money for road maintenance. Most road maintenance money is paid for using state grants and slow cog funds and that sort of thing. We use that as well, but we're supplementing that with our own general fund. Now, I don't know if that's actually going to be able to continue for the next year or two as we deal with this budget scenario, but I think that's kind of how it is, that, you know, we have the new improvements which are in the general plan, we have this long-term maintenance obligation which is a financial issue kind of outside the general plan.
Thank you.
All right, next we'll move on to the safety and noise element. For the safety element, the first part of this, the goals and policies we're really focusing on here are for emergency preparedness. We're looking at, you know, what does it take to save lives, prevent injury, and reduce property damage, which is why it's one of the state-required elements. For Atascadero, we participated in the 2000 update of the county general plan safety element. So a lot of our policies and goals come directly from that. There are, of course, additional policies that are unique to Atascadero. Some of the main things that we're looking at are going to be floods or dam failure, wildfires, and hazardous materials or other hazardous issues. These are some maps that we have in our general plan. The first smaller one here is for dam failure and inundation map. So that's if the Salinas Dam was to ever fail. These are the areas that could potentially flood. The larger one here is the floodplain map, and this is something that we use regularly for development. Whenever we get a development project and we want to know, is it going to be near a floodplain? Is it a 100-year floodplain, or is it a you know, something that happens more often? And then the Public Works Department really works with applicants to make sure that they're not building in those areas. This is the wildland fire hazard map, and we use this primarily in the building department and the fire department when it comes to what type of construction people need to do on their buildings. So if we're looking at the lighter color here, that's going to be the moderate area. These are more of the flat, more developed areas. As we get out from the door is our fault lines, and this is our geohazard map. And so these are areas that, you know, could potentially have you know, landslides or things of that sort. So this is another map in the general plan, or power line and pipeline map.
I'm just going to jump in here real quick and just kind of point something out. Yeah, I know, you know, something we hear in our department a lot, and I'm sure commissioners hear it as well, is, you know, it's harder to get a permit in Atascadero than it is, say, in Paso Robles. And a lot of that reason does have to do with these safety issues that we deal with. Atascadero is an area that's very prone to a disastrous fire scenario. So there's a whole new set. The amount of fire regulations we have that nobody else has is much, much more restrictive. We have requirements for the types of construction materials you can have out on the outside of your building, how big the wood members can be, how your roof vents are even done, are all very restrictive, how close accessory structures can be. We require special water lines, special fire department turnarounds. We've even required helipads on certain projects for evacuations. So nobody else deals with that, but we're dealing with it. Flooding is another big issue. All those hills and creeks are subject to flooding and drainage problems and downhill drainage. There isn't really a system of storm drains in Atascadero. So we deal with a lot of requirements to make people analyze how much water is going to come off their property, how they're going to keep it on their site. That requires a lot of engineering. So that's another one of those things that constantly are tripping people up. And then landslides, you know, those steep hills, a lot of them are very subject to sliding and failure. So there's a whole other set of requirements that we have for soil studies and reports and geohazard analysis and that sort of thing. So if you're building a house out there in the hills of Atascadero, those are beautiful areas, but there's a lot of risk in those beautiful areas. And as a result, the building and fire departments have some fairly restrictive requirements out there to deal with those hazards, but they do make it a little more difficult to build a house there than it would be in some of our surrounding communities. So I just wanted to point that out, because that's where a lot of those requirements come from.
Thank you.
Next, we'll go on to the noise element part of this. Now, when we're looking at the noise element, it's primarily a framework for it. We're primarily looking at here are, you know, looking at how are things like industrial or commercial or roadways going to be affecting the residential. Here's a diagram showing how these different uses can be compatible and which ones are going to be in conflict with each other. So what we try to do is mitigate these through the planning process. So how can we plan well so that we're not going to have these issues? We don't want to get to the point where we have to put up sound walls and, you know, soundproof all of our buildings. We want to just plan well so that these uses don't have a conflict. And that is it for the noise and safety element. Does anybody have any questions on those?
Commissioner Schmidt?
Does our fire department, have they created an urban interface program, urban-rural interface program?
Yeah, we've adopted the Wildland Urban Interface Code. We're one of the few, one of the earliest cities, I think, to adopt it. So that is on the books, and they are implementing that.
Do we have to deal with naturally occurring asbestos?
That is dealt with by the Air Pollution Control District, and they do issue that as a mitigation measure on some projects with large amounts of grading.
Thank you.
Anyone else?
All right.
Go ahead.
On to the housing element. So, as I mentioned before, this is the one element that the state of California has a high level of interest in, and this is the one element that you actually have to submit to the state for their review and approval. And the purpose of that, as we discussed, is that the state does have an interest in the provision and planning for housing. So what we have to do with our housing element is we need to make sure that we're providing housing for all economic segments. And the state basically has identified four segments right now that we're required to provide housing for. That's the very low-income category, the low-income category, the moderate-income category, and above-moderate-income category. And there's actually some other categories. There's a very, very low, and then there's a workforce, which is actually, I think, above-moderate. And those are starting to show up, so we may in the future have to address those as well. Our housing element, it was updated in 94. It was also updated in 2002. It's time for us to upper. We ended up getting, this is actually not the right one. This is it. This is a number we ended up getting in 2001, which was to provide 1,713 units. And then it gives you the breakdown of which income categories you were supposed to serve. So we were supposed to provide 343 very low-income units, 239 low-income units, 343 moderate units, and then the rest, 788, were to be above moderate. And what we do is we have to provide a report to the state every year to show how we've met those targets. And actually, providing low-income units or affordable units is a real challenge for communities. We actually had some success, or actually quite a bit of success, over the last 4 or 5 years. The city council did set a policy requirement that these new master plan developments provide 20% affordable units. Based on that, we were actually able to produce quite a few of those moderate income units. We had some success even with the very low income units, and we'll actually be bringing the annual report to the commission here in the next couple months. So it has actually, we've actually done fairly well providing those units. Now that we've kind of hit a slow spot in the economy, all production's pretty much stopped for the time being, so we're going to end up a little short. Our new allocation will actually be lower than our current allocation. The state does the allocations based on long-term demographic projections, job growth, that sort of thing. They were thinking this county was going to be growing fairly briskly in 2001. Now the state's thinking that we're actually going to slow down quite a bit. So our number will drop off, which actually makes updating our housing element a little easier than it was last time. We do have to identify potential sites, this table here, and then we had a map, identified those vacant sites throughout Atascadero that would be available for housing projects and which of those might be available for affordable projects. Typically, the state's mainly interested in your multifamily designations for affordable housing. So they want to see vacant multifamily, high-density sites available. That's what you're going to get credit for. One of the things we got dinged on with our last element is our maximum density in our general plan and zoning ordinance is 16 units the acre, which is how it's been in Atascadero forever, and that was a fairly contentious political issue, was whether we were going to bump that up to 20, and the council decided that, no, they wanted to leave it at 16 we have available to provide our new requirement. This map here is
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to ask Warren a question on the housing.
Thank you.
Warren, it appears that these charts that you gave us, it shows that we needed 1,499 housing units for the very low, low, moderate, and above moderate. But when I look at your potential sites, there's no way that even your potential sites would satisfy that number, especially in the very low. You've only had one unit built since 1-1-2001, and you have 341 that you need. And your potential site only shows, is it 90? I can hardly even see the number. It's so small.
Yeah, I think it shows 60.
Yeah. Well, yeah. So I'm wondering, how do we, as commissioners, deal with that kind of a requirement in a housing element, but we aren't meeting that requirement?
Well, we did have some problems just allocating that number of units, and that was a problem with this that RENA cycle in 2001. The numbers were so high and so aggressive, none of the cities really could allocate or meet those requirements. The beach cities had even worse time because a lot of them, you know, say like a Pismo or a Grover, they're pretty much built out, so coming up with 100 units of anything was tough for them. We think we can address this with this next update just because the numbers will be lower, and I think there'll be a little bit more flexibility in just defining the sites. It sounds like from the state, as long as you come up with the 20 units to the acre as a base density, they'll consider that affordable, and then you'll be able to claim credit that it could meet any of those categories. So I think, you know, the state's kind of adjusted their process a little bit more. I think it's going to work out better this time for us.
So reality is taking over a little bit?
At least for our area. I don't know about, you know, L.A. I think they still have trouble down there.
Okay, thank you.
Commissioner Marino?
Warren, so the 1499 still needed, when you say the number's going to go down, so the 1713 that were initially told, they don't then lop another amount on that. They're saying, okay, that 1713 was too aggressive, and you're expecting them to come back with a lower number.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. It's now a lower number. I don't know off the top of my head.
Okay.
It's about 40% of that number, I think. It's under 1,000.
40% of the 1499? Or of the 17?
Of the 17.
40% of, not 40, 40% downgrade or 60% downgrade?
60%
okay,
down.
Okay, thanks.
More or less.
Commissioner Ward?
There you go. I finally found the button. This is a philosophical question, and if you can't answer it, that's okay. But everything I've read about the general plan, all throughout these plans, is the concept of preserving the rural character of the city. And how can these pack them in like sardines housing projects square with that? I think they're, you know, it just screws up neighborhoods. And as they say, I'll take my answer on the air.
Well, that we knew that was a challenge, and that's, if we go back to the framework diagram, that was kind of our strategy here, is we knew that there was a lot of interest in maintaining the character and the different environments of Atascadero, and mainly those were out here in these light yellow areas and these darker yellow areas. The purple area, the urban core area, was an area that was primarily developed and didn't have a lot of unique natural resources there. So the general plan was set up to encourage most of that development to occur in that purple area. And that is the area where we're going to use, quote, compact development to maximize the use of land, and that's where most of the development is targeted. So that takes the pressure off the hills and that sort of thing, But the trade-off is you end up with a lot more dense type of development product. I know when the Dove Creek project on the south end of town was under construction, there was a lot of people saying, well, that doesn't really quite fit the character of a Tascadero. Lots are too small. Houses are too close together. What's with all the townhouses? Well, you got to think about that. We put almost 300 units on 60 acres, and about 10 acres was open space that we saved. Now, if you took those 300 units and built them at one or two units per acre, well, you could have eaten up 600 acres of woodlands doing that same project. So that's kind of the mindset, the shift, and that's what this diagram, you know, indicated, is that Dove Creek, that was an area.
Question. Has the city ever had an inventory of all the second units that are in people's backyards, because it would appear to me,
Chuck,
that
Commissioner
these
Ward,
would qualify as low cost housing.
Can you repeat the question
units
for the TV? Your mic's a little too far away; they couldn't hear you.
Okay.
Yep.
Shall I restate it?
Please.
Okay. Has the city ever had an inventory of all the backyard second units in this city? There's an awful lot of them, and it would appear to me that they're satisfying a very good chunk of that low-cost affordable housing program.
There are quite a few units in town that are second units. When we started the general plan update, second units actually weren't permitted in town. That's why I think there was quite a few that are out there that might not be totally permitted at this point. That was a type of housing that we identified as a critical component to providing affordable housing. So we have now changed the general plan and updated the zoning ordinance, and now second units, since I think about 2004, are allowable, and you can get them and permit them. So that's good. So now we're actually have a process to allow them. And some of the projects, like the Las Lomas project down there off of Halcon Road, they actually put second units into a new development. So I think that's a good part of it. We knew that also at the same time there was a lot of them out there that we would like to get permitted, so we know they're safe, and also would be able to claim credit for the state for providing these housing units. So the council did set up an amnesty program where you could come in and there was more relaxed standards for getting those things permitted and approved. And that actually worked pretty well. That program ran from 2004 to 2008. It actually ended last summer. But we did get quite a few in through the amnesty program. But we never went out and tried to do any sort of survey. There's a lot of issues and concerns with the government going out there and looking for things. So it was a voluntary program, and we encourage people to participate.
Thank you. Commissioner Schmidt?
Yes, I have a few questions, please. How often is the median income addressed? The second question, and maybe more of maybe clarification on the state allocation. Their highest density in the county is 39 units per acre, and when you try to develop a project at that amount, it's very, very difficult because there's obviously site constraints that are involved. And I would say from my experience has been that maybe 14 units per acre is what it works out to be in the county, although they have this number that says 39 is allowable.
Could you remind me of the first two questions?
The median, how often is
the median, okay,
income adjusted?
And then what was the second part?
The about the housing allocation numbers. It seems to me that they're more of a number that you put in the general plan, and the state doesn't come back every 5 years and say, how many of these have you built or how many of those have you built?
Okay. All right. In terms of median income, what we do is there's different ways to track that. We actually use the county's number. Their housing division publishes a report every month that shows what the latest median incomes are, what the interest rates are, and then they calculate what an affordable sales price or rent would be. So we just use that to set our targets because we don't have the staff to do those sorts of calculations ourselves. In terms of how the state verifies what you're doing in terms of meeting your allocation. They do approve your housing element, so the housing element has to be set up in such a way that it would allow or encourage this housing to theoretically occur at some level. And then we do have to provide reports annually that show our production and explain how we're working toward meeting the goals and requirements of the housing element. But you don't have to actually produce the units in the end, but you do have to have a process that allows those units to get built.
Yeah, exactly. So on the medium income then, although it doesn't change significantly from month to month, but technically it does then. I mean, that's a number that you look at each month?
Well, the county does, and I think I'm not exactly sure where they get their median number. I'm sure it comes from some sort of state agency. Typically, it's pretty stable, although for whatever reason, the state changed how they calculated in 2002, and we saw it jump up significantly in 1 year, but since then it's been fairly stable again.
Thank you.
Commissioner Benz, and then...
Topography of the land here in this city makes it economically not achievable to build on some of these. Nature has, through the topography, has limited the number of housing units that will be built because of the topography. And so we have that natural protection that goes along in the community. And that's why I was interested in that number that says improved and unimproved. How many acres? That's what really tells me whether what kind of job that we're doing, you know. So I think we sometimes fail to recognize that there's certain things in our community that either create a need for more development, and in other areas create less likely development because of the cost of building in a mountainous area. The cost of building isn't the same as building on a flat piece of land. So therefore, that's a natural inhibitor of development. And so there's a lot of good things that will keep open space and the rural character available to people in our community.
Commissioner Marino?
Warren, are second units considered in the potential sites? Very small print.
They weren't at the time because in 2001 we didn't allow them. So now when we do the update, we'll be able to better count those second units just because at a policy level we weren't allowing them when we first updated the general plan.
Okay. And will you be able to quantify the impact that the requirement that the Regional Water Quality Control Board is sort of pushing down on us, changing from the 1 acre minimum to a 2 acre minimum that comes with the basin plan? Will you be able to quantify what sort of impact that would have on meeting our affordable housing requirement?
I think that's going to be one of those things, you know, we'll be looking for the commission and council to give us some direction on how much they want to investigate some of those issues. It's not that we can't. Probably be fairly labor intensive, and I'm not sure how much it's going to affect anything. But those are the sorts of things, as we start doing this housing element update this spring, we'll be checking in with the commission, and that'll be the opportunity for the commission to give us some direction on those sorts of issues.
Okay. I know it's something that at all the different meetings that we've had that many people...
Projects that have been approved under this current general plan. So we did have a lot of new development that was approved following the 2001 update. I think there's almost 50 different projects. But if you look at the distribution of that and then look at the other screen where you see the purple urban core, you can see that's where all the development, for the most part, ended up being located. And we did end up, I think, approving almost 1,700 units, which is more than what we even thought our build-out was based on that first chart. But things actually did end up working fairly well, which I think just shows that, you know, the commission and council created a plan that made sense. You know, the market understood it and embraced it, and we actually had a lot of projects get built fairly quickly. Some of these, or a number of these, didn't get completed, and now we're working to try to keep those alive as we get through this economic cycle. So that will conclude staff's report.
Thank you very much, Warren. Kelly?
Very good. Very informative. Back to the agenda. The next item is commissioner comments and reports. If no one has any, I have one. Anyone else? Okay. Yep. Commissioner Schmidt?
Commissioner Moreno has been asking about those boxes. Did you get an answer on that yet? Or I have some experience with those, and so actually they're closer to San Anselmo than they are Traffic Way. I've been watching on television the meetings. And typically they're used to store gratings. And I would imagine that they probably have Caltrans has gone through and designated the striping on, well, the state has gone through and designated the striping on roads as toxic material. And so I would imagine that they probably contain the grading that's been taken off the highway and stored there temporarily at this point.
So we have a bunch of toxic material sitting in those boxes?
Technically, yes.
All right. You'll recall the last meeting we were talking about prioritizing training. Well, I took and I've updated it, including the two little insight to is to maybe the thinking of some of your fellow commissioners. So I pass this out for your information. And I'll continue to work with Warren on the training as we go. And I think at the meeting before the trip for League of Cities training, we'll talk about those training opportunities?
Yeah, I think, you know, we're going to try to address some of these training items kind of like we did tonight, you know, as time permits. And then as we go to some of these training sessions, we'll also try to hit some of those highlights or let everybody know, you know, which different sessions might best address some of these top concerns.
Okay, great. Thank you. Next item would be a director's report. Mr. Director.
Yes, just a couple things real quick. You probably saw in your packet this week this little purple flyer. This is a notice for a neighborhood meeting on a proposed amendment to the Dove Creek project. That's the planned development on the south end of town on Santa Barbara and El Camino Real. That project was approved with a 6-acre commercial site. It's supposed to be a neighborhood commercial site. We now have an applicant that wants to build a commercial project, but slightly different. So Tractor Supply Company, which is a company that is very similar to Farm Supply. They sell a lot of materials and goods for ranchettes, small agricultural operations, that sort of thing. They want to put a store in there, which sounds like a good idea. The one hang up there is they have their indoor store, which is fine, but they also have a 20,000 square foot outdoor storage area where they keep some of, you know, their supplies for sale, that sort of thing. The outdoor sales area isn't allowed by the planned development, so that would require an amendment. So that's what is being proposed, is to amend the planned development to allow that outdoor sales area. So we know that we got a lot of new people that bought into that project, and you know, it was sold as a grocery store there, and now it looks like it's going to be this use instead. So we want to make sure before we bring it to the Planning Commission that we've had an opportunity to meet with the neighborhood and let the applicant kind of explain the rationale and the project and show them the designs and take questions and that sort of thing. So that's what the purpose of the meeting is, find out what the neighborhood issues and concerns are and hopefully address those or change the project or adjust things so that we can address those as well as possible. So the neighborhood meeting's next week. This is looking like it's going to show up on your February 17th agenda. Because it's a planned development amendment, it also has to go to the city council. So it'll hit the city council in early March is the schedule right now for that one. So does that kind of make sense to everybody? All right. Planners Institute, we I know Annette's handed out the little flyers to the new commissioners as well. We have this training opportunity in Anaheim. It's March 25th through the 27th. It's great training for, especially for new commissioners, but any commissioners, it's good to go to. We're trying to get a head count of how many people want to go. We do have obviously some budget issues in the city, so I'm trying to get the money and get the allocation. So I'm encouraging all the commissioners to attend, but we do want to get a number down as soon as possible. So I don't know, just maybe show of hands of those that know that they want to go at this point. Okay, so everybody but Mr. O'Grady. Dan, are you going to pass on this one?
I think so.
Okay, so I got six for sure's then. Okay, so I'll work with Annette and we'll start getting this nailed down. And what I talked with Sandy about is probably the meeting before we go, we'll go over the agenda and maybe try to figure out what the best sessions are and see how, if we can kind of get organized so we hit as much stuff as possible. And let's see, I think that will conclude my report.
Let me ask you a question, Warren, if
yeah.
I may. You said that we shouldn't attend the Dove Creek, and I was wondering if we should attend the January 27th City Council meeting.
That's a City Council meeting, so there's no Brown Act issues at all there. The commission is definitely,
Once again, be careful about what you get trapped into.
Yeah, right? There's no problems with you guys attending. They're going to be talking about all the city issues. I think it would be a real interesting discussion for all the commissioners to hear. There'll be a lot of stuff besides planning issues, but you'll hear about the budget issues and police and fire issues and everything else. So I think it's really good information. So the commission, if you've got the time available, just to show up, intermittently.